Blog Talk Radio.
Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello, welcome everybody. This is Robert Porto, and sitting beside me from Checkpoint Shear is the Gypsy Musher himself, Hugh Neff. Hugh, how's it going?
It's been a pretty crazy morning. I'm a little busy, man. I've been running around this lake all morning with people showing up from all over the world that want to see what it feels like to be behind an Iditarod dog team.
And I know you're giving dog sled rides here until this evening. Tell people where this is at for people to listen locally.
You can just look it up on the internet, 7683 Westine Drive, Wasilla, Alaska. It's right off of Pittman Road. Dave's been kind enough to let us do this, and boy, we've had people rolling in. I just barely was able to have breakfast a little while ago because people were showing up at 10 o'clock for rides, and it's been great.
And you're doing it just for donations, and, of course, you're talking about selling people your book, too. Tell us a little bit about that book for people that haven't listened in a while.
Tales of the Gypsy Musher, written by not me but the dogs, about the crazy mushing lifestyle that we all enjoy. And I did a few shows at the Millennium Hotel, which is the big Iditarod sponsor, this week. And I've been selling, I don't know how many books, but they're going like wildfire right now because there's so many teachers in town. And this book is specifically written by me. It's my first 20 years with the dogs in Alaska. And we talk about, not about winning races, but about being a team player, getting along with your neighbors in life, learning to respect others, and going places, seeing the world, and luckily that's what my life's about.
That is what it's about. Just came off of second place finish in the Yukon Quest, ceremonial start tomorrow for Iditarod, and then, of course, the restart on Sunday. But before we talk about what's on everybody's mind, the trail conditions, tell us a little bit about your dogs this year. Who's running? Out here looking at some of these guys, I haven't seen them in a while.
That was great, man. I loved being at the Iditarod banquet last night because, just all these newer kids, are pretty much the show now. That's what they show on the videos, and most of them are from this area, so they want to promote the local people, and nobody's really talking about me at all this year, and that's exactly the way I want it. But it's the best team I've ever had. Obviously, I have three of Brent Sass's dogs. Unfortunately, Brent had a pretty bad accident, and he's recovering from that still. So I've got his dogs are Heath and Copper, and a dog named Yukon that he actually got through the grapevine from a fellow named Robert Surley from Norway, who's won this race twice. And beautiful dogs. They're all dialed in. I've got my old leader that my ex-girlfriend Tamara Reynolds from the Yukon has let me borrow. Her name is Juanita, and she's the dog that I won the quest with. So Alan and Allie made a nice little speech at the end of the quest about how I was an inspiration to them when I luckily beat him in the quest a couple of years ago by 20 seconds. But they've been a bit of an inspiration to me, so the season isn't over yet.
So you have 19 dogs out here in the yard. Some of the names that a lot of the fans know, you have, who do you have, Amigo and George and, like you said, Juanita and Bodie.
Sister Jewel.
And Jewel.
Bodie, I really messed up in the quest, man. Bodie is a Hans Scott mixed dog. I got bred up with a dog from him called Tank, and with Annie and Walter's sister, and man, I really messed up. I didn't even put him in lead until the second to last day of the quest, and all of a sudden we started flying again. And I only had 8 dogs at the time. We're doing the same speeds as the other teams that had 5 more dogs in their team, so Bodie's definitely going to be a lead a little bit more this race. Out of the dogs of 16, I've got 11 that have been to Nome. So for all my friends out there who are, I might have lost a little bit of money on me in the past by betting on me, you might want to reconsider making sure that you bet on me this year, because I've never felt so confident in my life.
You know, one dog that is missing is Walter. I know he's a big fan favorite. He's getting up there in age. So what is Walter doing during his time off while you're running to Nome this year?
Well, Walter was just actually in Tamara's team. She did a shorter 180-mile race, I believe, and White Horse last week, and he was actually in lead when she finished. That was pretty cool to see. But he's resting up now. He'll be the main star of the school tour in May, and we're going to take him with us, Nicole and I. And it's going to be fun, you know, because these kids, I think that our dogs up here are like the dogs that they have down, you know, wherever they might live. But these are really special animals. Walter's done 12,000 milers.
Wow.
More than any other. I was talking with Sonny Litter about this. He's like, yeah, Walter's probably done more than any other dog in the history of the sport. Just because in the past, people weren't running 2,000-mile races every year. So he's a very special dog. And even though he won't be doing the longer races, he'll still probably do some mid-distance stuff. I might take him to Kotzebue when we do the 440 in April. So one of those dogs I just sort of have to have out there with me because he makes it more fun to play with.
So tell us about the trail conditions. I'm sure a lot of people are asking about that. A lot of people are seeing pictures. It's the talk of the town, at least here at Anchorage. What did they tell you at Iditarod, and what do you expect out there? I already know what you're going to say, but tell the fans what they want to hear.
Well, folks, I'm from a place called Tok, Alaska. It's 5 hours north of here. It's 10 below up there right now. It was last night. So this is Miami to me, and after being in the Mushroom meetings lately, I enjoy the meetings. I appreciate all that Iditarod does, but I didn't really get into mushing to hang out with a bunch of people that are whining and complaining all the time. And now I can see why a lot of these Iditaroders don't do the quest, because they're expected trail put in by snow machines for everything they do. When I run dogs, I don't even want to have a trail. I want to be out there like the real deal in the old days, putting in trail myself. So the quest, I'm sure, was easily as tough a trail as what we're going to see in Iditarod. What's interesting is the trail of Iditarod, it's more of a gradual trail. I was trying to explain this to people last night at the banquet. The quest trail is twists and turns, and you're all over the place. But the Iditarod is, generally speaking, more like the race I did last year in Norway, the Finnmark Slope, where it's a faster trail because it's more graded and smooth. It's not going to be like that for the Dalzell and the steps, probably. But that's why, as a musher, you have to figure out, how am I going to be able to do this with my dogs in a more controlled manner? I've talked to Paul Gephardt, a few other mushers that are actually using locking systems to slow their sleds down. But there's all different types of ways to figure out a way to slow your team down. The best musher I've ever seen doing this probably was, remember a couple of years ago, I was traveling with Sebastian Schinella coming into Shaktulik, and he was just going easy, going down a hill. And that dog team was walking down a mountain. So for all these mushers that are freaking out about trail conditions, I would say, you know, maybe you need to do your training style in a different manner and stop expecting everybody to be grooming everything for you and figure out how they used to do it back in the old days when you had the guys like Joe May, you know, Dick Mackey, Joe Reddington, all the Reddingtons really, Bud Smith, and those guys. If you ever look at the old Iditarod videos, they were going through some really tough stuff. So it's going to be tough out there, but you just got to stay mentally focused and deal with it.
You know, it's nothing new. The trail conditions around these parts, I live right here, so I run a lot of these local trails that you guys are going to hit out on. It's been like this since mid-January, so it's nothing new, especially for these local mushers. They run on these trails all the time. So it's not a big deal if you live around here.
And in the past, if you look recently, the mushers that live in warmer environments like the Seavies down in Sterling or the Reddingtons here in Kinnick, it's a big advantage. Those dogs are used to running in the warm weather. So, and as far as trail conditions, most of the time your worst trail is when you're around villages or in areas that are around lots of snow machines where you're going to get more moguls and stuff of that nature. So the meeting yesterday, they were trying to show us some pictures and stuff like that, and I didn't even really want to look at any of it because I want to look at it with my own eyes. Especially with mushers, I never really believe anything a musher's telling me, and something I've just learned through the years, I just watch them. So when I look at a musher, half the time, I don't really care what they're going to tell me. I'm looking at their dogs, I'm seeing if they're eating, I'm seeing how they're sleeping, how they're curled up. Something I learned from a buddy of mine, Jake Hadza, for UConn. With dog mushing, you just got to look at all the, as Jeff King would say, take a look at the big picture. Don't just worry about what people are telling you.
So is this a concern for you this year, or is it just kind of take it as it goes?
I just want to get out of here, man. You know.
Yeah.
I live out there, so it is a concern, you know, but I've done the 440 up in Kotzebue. That's in April every year. We're running, 1 year I did it, I remember Jeff was actually suntanning. It was like 55 degrees out, and I just grabbed like this antler that I found on the side of the trail, and I showed it to Jeff, and he's like, awesome. So, you know, you got to just take it with a grain of salt and realize it is what it is, and be cautious and be careful. You don't, what I do in all these races, to tell you the truth, is I just try to be off on my own. I don't want to be around a bunch of mushers. That's usually where the problems start. So this whole race, I'm just going to try to get my own little bubble and stay there. And, you know, you want to be up in a good position, but you definitely don't want to be in the lead. I've learned that in the past. You just want to sort of travel well, keep your team together, and if you're looking good in your little lead, then you figure out what type of game plan. So there goes Nicole. This is our 11th run already today, I think.
They're
12th.
They're out running here on Scott Lake, right off of Dave Shear's place. And for folks that don't know about Dave Shear, two-time Iditarod finisher, Yukon Quest finisher.
12th place finisher.
12th place finisher. Back in the day, was that 96, I believe. He's been on the show before.
And that's why I'm always a little bit saddened by the media nowadays, because I don't think they're enlightened enough about how to show this sport in the proper light. They're all about showing the top three and the winners and all that sort of stuff, where Dave Shear's one of the greatest dog men ever. I was hanging out with him and my greatest motion hero, Sonny Linder, and good buddy of mine, Timmy Osmar, who I chased after my whole first Iditarod back in 04. And guys like that, a lot of these people out here don't even know who they really are. And these are like the greatest dog men of this generation. And you know what? They might not have won this race or that race, but there's a line of dogs that are called Dave Shear dogs.
I have some of them myself.
And Timmy, you know, Timmy's dad rents dogs every year for thousands of dollars. Dean, who's another amazing dog man. So for me, I love the Iditarod. I love what the Iditarod stands for. I love the history of the Iditarod. I love the native people around the Iditarod. But as far as the mushers go, I tell people it's like going back to your school reunion. You want to see some of the people, but there's a lot of them that you really don't agree on, their views of dogs in this sport. And so for me this year, and I hope I don't come off in the wrong light, I hope people learn by watching the Quest, but I do care for the other mushers, and that's the code of the North, you know, look out for each other. But for me this year is all about the dogs, my team, and putting on a good show. I really am going to be dialed in this year more than ever before.
So heading out 61st on Sunday, is that correct?
Yeah, that's Yukon there howling away.
Dogs are going crazy out there as Nicole and the dogs are running around the lake here. Like we said at the beginning of the show, Hugh is offering rides this afternoon to about 6 o'clock or so, 7 o'clock here at Dave's.
As long as I'm at the trading post in Willow by 8 o'clock for Hobo.
There you go. All Hobo Jim. So let's talk about 61st position.
Yeah.
Is that good or bad for you?
I'm loving it. It's like I told somebody else, all I got to do is get rid of the 6.
Get rid of the 6. There you go.
But I've done it before. I've done it quite often, actually. And for me, it's logical. I guess a lot of people think you need to be up in the front right away, but I prefer to run dogs according to, you know, the weather and the time of day, and I'd rather run dogs at 4 in the afternoon starting off than 2 in the afternoon.
Right.
And generally speaking, the trail is quite rock hard and fast all the way to Squantna, and then after that it can get a little iffy, but, you know, we all got ways of running dogs. I ain't going to do any Martin stuff, that's for sure, but I think Martin definitely, we all are going to key off what he did last year. He's still the team to beat. I think genetically speaking, Martin's dogs are superior. If you look at the races this year, him and Rowan have been just blowing people away, really. Allie and Alan are next up, obviously. And that being said, I would much rather be the underdog than have to have the pressure those people have on them. They're expected to do well. A lot of these Iditaroders expect me to fall apart, and I hope they do all the way to Nome.
You know, on your last show, you said you claimed a top 5 finish. Has that changed at all the last couple of weeks since you've been on before?
Oh, not at all, Dave. Not at all.
Top 5 finish for Mr. Hugh Neff. What's the best position you've ever finished in Iditarod?
Fifth. And out of the team I have this year, 3 of the dogs came in 5th last year with my buddy Ray Reddington. Mojito and his sister Havana and Bodie were all in the race. against him.
Awesome.
And they're all leaders. Ray didn't put him in lead, but they're all lead for me. Like I said, 11 of these dogs have been to Nome, many of them multiple times. I believe a lot of people look at it differently. The Norwegians that I talked to last night didn't think that was a big deal. I was hanging out with my buddy Thomas Werner, who won the Finnmark last year, and he didn't seem like that was a big deal to him. For me, I would prefer to have a dog that knows where it's going.
You know, speaking of Norwegians, Europeans in general, there's quite a few of them there this year, bigger than years past, isn't there?
Yeah, it's great, man. I feel like I'm almost back in Norway again. These guys I respect like few others. They're not only great mushers, they're gentlemanly people. And it's the old way, and I talk to people like Dave and other folks, and they see the difference. A lot of us mushers, we don't even really talk to each other that much anymore, and it's sad, man, because this race was started as a celebration, and now it's become a... I have nothing against, you know, money coming into the race and everything, but when mushers are making their decisions according to pleasing their sponsors instead of supporting the overall health of the mushing community, it makes you wonder, you know, what is this race about?
What is this race about now? You know, a lot's changed over the last few years. I know you and I talked about it on your last show. Then, of course, there's been a lot of talk this year about the spot trackers and people following it. Do you think that that's going to influence the race in any way, good or bad, in the next year or two? The way people follow it.
You know how it is, man. It causes a hysteria.
Right, exactly.
People are sleep-deprived as we are. I mean, everybody's up all the time watching it, but they can see why we get so into it. Because it's enjoyable. We're getting off on the whole adventure and the energy of the moment, if you will. Are they good or bad? Tough call.
I know John.
You don't know what we're doing out there.
You know, John Schandelmeyer said yesterday in the Alaska Anchorage Daily News, he said that it's taken the dog out of dog mushing. What do you think about that?
Well, the way people believe much that John Schandelmeyer has to say, but. And I really haven't seen much of him in races in the last few years either. So as far as dog mushing, there's a reason why dog is in the front of mushing, and dogs will always be what draws people in. But it's also a competition, and, you know, we're all getting dialed in. Everybody's getting more and more tuned in to perfecting their talent, and we all do it in different ways, but we all have lots of similarities as well. Personally, I don't know if it's going to happen in my lifetime, but I would definitely like to see more of a system where we are forced as mushers to rest the dogs more. Because what's happening is I think we're seeing people that are cutting back on rest, and I've done it as well because of the rules. So if we're going to be forced to take a mandatory a certain checkpoint, people are going to push to that checkpoint, because they know they're going to have to stay there for 8 hours or what have you. So I would like to see a tie-in with these spot trackers where if we, say, take a break out on the trail like Brent was doing in the quest, once that spot tracker is sitting in a position for more than 15 minutes, that counts as rest time. And so they're going to say between checkpoints or in a certain part of the race, you have to take a required amount of rest, and that will be tied in with these spot trackers. It's doable if there's an engineer out there who can figure it out, how to make that system. And I think that would be cooler for the race because we would still have the leapfrogging going on. You could still do longer runs, but we would have a more equitable balance of rest throughout the whole race field. And that's what this race should be about. It shouldn't be about the top 5 or 10 teams or the people that have been here 20 or 30 years who think they own the race. Should be about the whole field. Rookies should get just as much of a playing field as the people who you see on TV and all that. So I think it's something that maybe the Iditarod and the Quest and people in mushing should maybe think about in the future.
You know, that's an excellent point. We'll definitely pass that along on your page. So after Iditarod, what's happening? You had mentioned the school tour in May. You do that every year. You said you'd also plan on doing the Kobuk 440. What else is on tap before all the snow melts around here and we're time to rest in the summertime?
Hopefully I'll be doing a race before 440. We got a new race that they're starting up. Rick Mackey and Jerry Riley, my buddy Jesse Holmes, and a bunch of folks in Nanana are trying to get a race going from Nanana. where I used to live, to Manly, where I used to live and back, and that'd be a great race. Springtime is such a great time to run young dogs and train them up and get them used to the whole environment. So that'll be a nice flat race. They're trying to start, I think, on the 21st of March. So I fly back on the 18th. I'm hoping to drive up to Tokes, switch out dogs, and then go do that race and get the dogs trained up a little bit for Nicole and I. We'll be doing Port 40 again.
Yeah.
So busy, but, you know, it's a great life.
You know, that race there, they're calling it the Mail Trail Run.
Yeah.
That's the original Serum Run Trail from Nenana on out that way and back, of course.
Yeah, I think it's a cool race. There's some race they did I thought that was really neat. It was just a 30-mile race called the Rendezvous. It's in Whitehorse, and it's each dog came 10 dogs. You have to carry a certain amount of weight in the sled, equitable to the weight of your dog. So it's a heavy sled, like the old male guys used to drive. And let's get a little bit more of not just who has the fastest team out there, but who has the best dog team out there. I think it'd be cool to see more unique races like that where we, you know, there's been races where the people started off in sleeping bags, like the cold foot race back in the day, and they jumped out of their bag and put all their stuff together and had to put their dogs in harness and go. I think races like that are sort of cool, too.
Of course. It's not always about pleasing the sponsors all the time, is it?
Well, you got to keep them happy.
Of course.
But, you know, money comes, money goes, but the dogs will always be here.
That's right. And for folks that are hearing all that scratching going on, that's Dave Shears' dog, Star, highly enjoying a bone right behind Hugh. So
yes.
So that's what all that is. Not a problem, Dave. We're okay with Star. Star is the mascot around these parts. Dave is now a realtor with a lab.
Say hi, Dave. Hey, everybody.
Yeah,
speaking of sponsors, all these bones are actually from my sponsor, one of my sponsors, Delta Meat and Sausage, up in the Delta Junction area. So thank you, Jeannie. But I think I was talking with Kelly Maxner, who's a dentist yesterday. He's also a musher from this area. We were talking about how bones are vital to dogs. They're great for their teeth. And the health of a dog, the teeth are very important because you can have other issues with dogs if you don't keep their mouths in good shape.
Right, right. So hitting the trail tomorrow in the ceremonial start, and then, of course, Sunday for real there in Willow. You know, there was a lot of talk that they were thinking about moving it up to Fairbanks, but obviously it's down here. Did you have any thoughts on that, good or bad, about it being up there versus down here?
There's been a lot of crazy driving for the mushers at ceremonial down here, driving up to Fairbanks. For me personally, you know, I lived in Tanana. I worked for the Earharts up there. I love, you know, Joey and Pam Reddington, and Brent is from Manly Hot Springs. That would have been cool. But it's the Iditarod Trail now. And, you know, the Iditarod is going to be dissected more than ever this year, if they made the right decision or not. But as mushers, we should be giving our wholehearted thanks and gratitude to Mark Nordman, Andy Willis, and all the people who are busting their rear ends for weeks trying to keep this trail together and trying to do what's right for the dogs and the mushers. And I think so many people out there nowadays are just me and narcissistic and want everything to give them to them instead of trying to give back and realizing how lucky we are to do what we do. You know, it's going to be tough out there. The gorge has its issues and the steps and all that, but come on, man.
It's still
unless you haven't done the quest, it's like these Iditariders whining about trail conditions.
It's still dog mushing. You take it as it goes, for sure. Let's switch gears. We have a couple of minutes left, Hugh, about 5 minutes left. Let's talk about that school tour coming up in May. Where are you heading to this year?
Everywhere. Well, what I'm doing is I'm flying into Chicago, doing shows around the Chicagoland area in early May, as well as Wisconsin. Then we go up to over 10 years now, I've been going to the Rochester, New York area, Webster, Saratoga Springs, which is out by Albany. Then we're down New York, Pennsylvania, then usually Atlanta area. Tennessee is a big deal for us because I like to stop in there. Just got a few schools from that area this morning, in fact. And then I'd like to go visit Hobo, who has a house in Nashville as well. And then, you know, I was born in Chattanooga, so I love the South. Then I always go through Ohio. I have lots of schools there I'd like to talk to. And then we return to Indiana and then back in through the Chicago again. So, but I'm going to be doing another tour where we're going to Houston and New Orleans in the fall. And I might be visiting Kurt Pirano and his wife. They're racing in the Iditarod. And they also did the Quest. And
he heads out first tomorrow.
Does he really?
Sunday.
He's from New Zealand, man. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to getting down there. I've always wanted to go to New Zealand and going to be doing some world traveling. You know, I go to Germany every year now. And my book's actually being translated into German, and it will be featured in the Globetrotter store, which is like their version of Cabela's.
Awesome.
Speaking of Cabela's, so I met these two girls last night. You know there's new Cabela's.
Brand new.
They're like, hey, you got to get over here. So I explained to these girls. I call them my Jeff King boots. I don't even know if Jeff designed this particular boot, but it's a brown boot, brown rubber bottom. I had to retire my boots after 10,000-mile races because they're just... They've been through a bit of water and overflow and that sort of stuff, but can you imagine 10,000-mile
wow.
with one pair of boots?
That's testament to the quality.
Yeah, good for Anchorage, good for Alaska. Thank you, Cabela's, for finally making it up here. I can't wait to get back to my dinner. The girl said I can come by and check out the store. So
very cool. Yeah, just opened over towards the Diamond Mall area in South Anchorage. I got to check that out as well. I'm a big Cabela's fan. So just about out of time, anything else you want to mention before we go?
Hobo Jim.
Tonight, yeah. Willow Trading Post. Always a good time if you're
near. You have to, as a boy in Chicago, sitting on the couch, tears coming down my eyes, watching Hobo Jim. On the David Hartman Good Morning America.
Is
remember
that right?
About my age, man. That's a long
time. I remember that back then.
Teary-eyed just thinking about it. And he was singing about Alaska, and he's on the Portage Glacier. And I just saw his energy, and I just said, I want to be like that, dude. And people think I want to be like some marsher or whatever, but I always just wanted to be like Hobo Jim.
Well, we got
for me, dogs are my music. You know?
We got to teach you how to play guitar.
I don't know about that, but I can sing like Jim Morrison.
There you go.
But I love Hobo, man.
So, Hugh, we'll definitely touch base when you get back. We'll have a show to talk about everything that happened on
Night
Interrupt.
Maybe from Nome. Who knows?
Maybe from Nome. We've done that before. I recall a couple of years ago we tried to pin you down and get that show done in Nome, you know, always cell phone coverage and all that together. So look forward to seeing you on the trail. We'll all be rooting for you here at Checkpoint Shear for sure. He's over there whipping up some cakes or something.
He's a heck of a cook,
eh? He sure is. So, and you got to visit his salmon grill. It's going to be around this
good luck to all the mushers out there, you guys. Let's put on a good show for everybody.
Very good. So, Hugh Neff, Gypsy Musher. Hugh Neff, Gypsy Musher, GypsyMusher.com website, right?
Exactly.
There you go, guys. We'll see you guys on the trail. Goodbye.